The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Etang santan, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samatho. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely, the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, today we have before us the third sermon on Nibbana. The other day, with the help of the simile of a whirlpool, he attempted an explanation of the terms samsara on the one hand and nibbana on the other, that is to say, going round or samsarana and going out or nisarana. We also cited suttas to illustrate both the arising, samudaya and cessation, nirodha aspects of the law of dependent arising. As regards this whirlpool, to show a parallel development with the links of the law of dependent arising, by way of a sustained simile, we may say that the ignorance in presuming that it is possible to go against the mainstream of the three signata, impermanence, suffering and not self, is the place of its origin. That heap of preparations impelled by ignorance which takes the current forward may be regarded as sankharas. And where the current in its progress clashes with the mainstream to become a whirlpool, that pushing forward against the mainstream is vijnana or consciousness. The outcome of the clash is nama-rupa or name and form, with its formal name and nominal form. That link in the formula of dependent arising called salayatana or sixth sense basis could be regarded as the outgrowth of this name and form. We can understand that link too in relation to the simile of the whirlpool. As the whirlpool goes on for a long time, an abyss is formed, the functioning of which could be compared to the sixth sense basis. As a matter of fact, bodily pains are comparable to an abyss. In a certain sutta in the Sanyutta Nikaya, the Buddha says, Sharirikanam koyetam bhikkave dukkhanam vedanam adivachanam yadidam pataloti. Monks, abyss is a synonym for painful bodily feelings. When one comes to think about that statement, it would appear that the thirst of craving arises in beings in various forms of existence because of painful feeling. The Sallattena Sutta adds to this by stating that the uninstructed worldling, on being touched by painful feeling, delights in sense pleasures because he knows no way out of painful feeling other than the sense pleasures. In the light of that statement, it seems that the abyss is the endless barrage of painful feelings. The force of attraction that arises from the abyss is like the thirst to quell those painful feelings. The grasping that follows is the functioning of the same force of attraction. It attracts all the flotsam and jetsam around it, as things organically appropriated, upadina, to put up a show of existence, upav. That is, a spot that can be pointed out with the help of things thus grasped by the whirlpool. So this whirlpool or vortex simile gives us some idea of the law of dependent arising. The insight into the basic principle of dependent arising is in fact regarded as the arising of the eye of Dhamma. About the stream winner, it is said that the dustless, stainless eye of Dhamma has arisen in him. The following phrase, which sums up the significance of the Dhamma eye, comes up quite often in the discourses. යම් කිංචි සමුදය ධම්මං සබ්බං තං නිරෝධ ධම්මං whatever is of a nature to arise, all that is of a nature to cease. Sometimes it is briefly alluded to with the couple of terms samudaya and nirodha, as samudayo, samudayo, and nirodho, nirodho. It is as if the experience of that insight has found expression as an exclamation, arising, arising, ceasing, ceasing. The above phrase only connects up the two aspects of that experience. It seems then that what is called the Dhamma is the ability to see the Nibbanic solution in the very vortex of the samsaric problem. That way of analysis which puts samsara and Nibbana far apart into two watertight compartments, as it were, gives rise to interminable problems. But here we see that just as much as one could realize Nibbana by discovering the cause of suffering and following the path to its cessation, which in effect is the understanding of the Four Noble Truths, one could also put an end to this vortex by understanding its cause and applying the correct means for its cessation. In the previous sermon, we happened to quote some canonical verses which declared that the vortex does not exist for an Arahant. Now, as regards the condition after the cessation of the vortex, if someone asks, where the vortex or the whirlpool has gone, what sort of answer can we give? It is the same difficulty that comes up in answering the question, where has the fire gone when it has gone out? Because here too, what we call the whirlpool is that current of water which went against the mainstream. It also consists of water, like the body of water outside it. So we cannot say that they united, nor can we say that it went and hit somewhere. Here we find ourselves in a queer situation. All we can say in fairness to truth is that there had been a certain form of activity, a certain state of unrest due to certain causes and conditions. Because of that activity that was going on there, it was possible to designate it, to give it a name. By worldly convention, one could refer to it as that place or this place. The entire field of activity was called a whirlpool by worldly convention. But now the so-called whirlpool is no more. The worldly convention is no more applicable as in the case of an extinguished fire. The word fire was introduced. The concept of fire was created to designate a certain state of affairs that arose due to causes and conditions, due to graspings. So from this also we can see that it is in concepts that ignorance finds a camouflage. Being unaware of it, the world goes on amassing concepts and even expects to see them in Nibbana. There are some who fondly hope to get a vision of their lists of concepts when they realize Nibbana. But their wisdom penetrates through even the concepts, and that is why it is called Udyatthagamini Panya Arya Nibbedika. The Aryan penetrative wisdom that sees the rise and fall. The idea of penetration is already implicit in the phrase Yam kinchi samudaya dhammam sabbam tan nirodha dhammam. Whatever is of a nature to arise, all that is of a nature to cease. If anything has the nature to arise, by that very nature it is bound to come to its end. And that is why the wandering ascetic Upatissa, who was to become Venerable Sariputta later, attained the fruit of a stream winner even on hearing the first two lines of the verse uttered by Venerable Asit. Ye dhamma hetu prabhava te sang hetum tathagato vaha. Of things that arise from a cause, their cause the tathagata has told. When a wise man hears that something has arisen due to causes and conditions, he immediately understands that it could be made to cease by the removal of those conditions, even without further explanation. It is the dustless, stainless, dumb eye that enables one to see the Nibbanic solution in the very structure of the samsaric problem. In our quotation from the Mahanidana Sutta, it was said that all pathways for verbal expression, terminology and designation exist so long as the vortex of samsara is kept quiet. The implication, therefore, is that they have no existence beyond it. This is the significance of the word etavata, in so far only. तावता जायथवा जीयथवा मीयथवा चवेथवा उपजिथवा. In so far only can one be born, or grow old, or die, or pass away, or reappear. So the concepts of birth, decay and death, passing away and reappearing are meaningful only in the context of the samsaric vortex between consciousness and name and form. If somehow or other this interrelation could be broken, this samsaric vortex, the whirlpool, could be stopped, then after that nothing remains to be said. Nothing remains to be predicated. And as it is said in the Upasīva Sutta of the Suttanipāta, Yena Nangvajyu Tantasanathi, that by which they would speak of him, that for him exists not. There are a number of canonical passages that show us the relevance of this vortex simile to the understanding of the doctrine of Paticca-samuppāda. In the Mahāpadāna Sutta of the Dīghanikāya, we find a lengthy description of the manner in which the Bodhisattva Vipassi got an insight into Paticca-samuppāda. We are told that his mode of approach was one of radical reflection, or yoniso-manasikāra, literally attention by way of the matrix. One might as well say that it is an attention by way of the vortex. It is as if a man with keen vision sitting under a tree by a river were to watch how a fallen leaf gets carried away by the water current, only to get whirled up and disappear in a vortex. It is clearly stated in the case of Vipassi Bodhisattva that his understanding through wisdom came as a result of radical reflection, yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara ahu panyaya abhisamaya. So his insight into Paticca-samuppāda was definitely not due to recollection of past lives. Yoni means the matrix or the place of origin. So in yoniso manasikara, always the attention has to turn towards the place of origin. So true to this method, we find the Bodhisattva Vipassi starting his reasoning from the very end of the Paticca-samuppāda formula. Kim minukho sati jaramaranam hoti kim paccaya jaramaranam. Given what does decay and death come to be? From which condition comes decay and death? To this question, the following answer occurred to him. Jati akho sati jaramarna hoti, jati paccaya jaramarna. Even birth does decay and death come to be. From birth as condition comes decay and death. In the same manner, taking pair by pair, he went on reasoning progressively. For instance, his next question was, kim minukho sati jati hoti, kim paccaya jati. Given what does birth come to be? From which condition comes birth? And the answer to it was, bhave kho sati jati hoti, bhava paccaya jati. Given becoming, birth comes to be. From becoming as condition comes birth. He went on reasoning like this up to and including name and form. But when he came to consciousness, he had to turn back. When he searched for the condition of consciousness, he found that name and form itself is the condition, whereby he understood their interdependence. And then he gave expression to the significance of this discovery in the following words. Pachyudāvattati khoidam vinyānam nāma rūpam mā nāparam gacchati yattāvatā jāyathavā jīyathavā mīyathavā cavethavā upajyathavā yadidam nāma rūpachyā vinyānam vinyānapachyā nāma rūpam nāma rūpachyā salāyatanam salāyatanapachyā phasso phassapachyā vedanā vedanāpachyā tannā tannāpachyā upādānam upādānapachyā bhavo bhavapachyā jāti jātipachyā jarā maraṇaṁ śoka parideva dukkha domana supāyāsa sambhavati evametassa kevalassa dukkhakhandassa samudayo hoti. By means of radical reflection, the Bodhisattva Vipassi understood that all concepts of birth, decay and death converge on the relationship between consciousness and name and form. This consciousness turns back from name and form. It does not go beyond. In so far can one be born or grow old or die or pass away or reappear, in so far as this is, namely, consciousness is dependent on name and form and name and form on consciousness. Dependent on name and form, the sixth sense basis. Dependent on the sixth sense basis, contact. Dependent on contact, feeling. Dependent on feeling, craving. Dependent on craving, grasping. Dependent on grasping, becoming. Dependent on becoming, birth. and dependent on birth, decay and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to be. Thus is the arising of this entire mass of suffering. The fact that this understanding of Paticchasamuppada signified the arising of the Dhamma, I, in Vipassi Bodhisattva, is stated in the following words. Samudayo samudhyoti kho bhikkave vipassisa bodhisattasya pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu takvamudapadi, nanangudapadi, panyahudapadi, vijjahudapadi, halokudapadi. Arising, arising, thus, O monks, in regard to things unheard of before, they arose in the bodhisattva vipassi, the I, the knowledge, the wisdom, the science, the light. In the same way, it is said that the Bodhisattva clarified for himself the cessation aspect through radical reflection. Kimhinukho asati jaramaranam nahoti, chissa nirodha jaramaranam nirodha. In the absence of what will decay and death not be, in the cessation of what is the cessation of decay and death. And at the answer to it, the following thought occurred to me. Jati akho asati jaramaranam nahoti, jati nirodha jaramaran nirodha. In the absence of birth, there is no decay and death. With the cessation of birth, is the cessation of decay and death. Likewise, he went on reflecting progressively until he reached the link between name and form and consciousness, and then it occurred to him. Namarupa nirodha vinyana nirodho, vinyana nirodha namarupa nirodho. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of consciousness. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form. Once this vital link is broken, that is when consciousness ceases with the cessation of name and form, and name and form ceases with the cessation of consciousness, then all the other links following name and form, such as the six sense bases, contact and feeling, come to cease immediately. The Mahapadana Sutta goes on to say that Bodhisattva Vipassi continued to dwell, seeing the arising and passing away of the five grasping rupes, and that before long his mind was fully emancipated from the influxes and that he attained to full enlightenment. It is also said in the sutta in this connection that the Bodhisattva followed this mode of reflection because he understood that it is the way of insight leading to awakening. Adigato ko myayam vipassana maggo bodhaya. I have found this path of insight to awakening, to enlightenment. And as we saw above, the most important point, the pivotal point in this path of insight is the relationship between name and form and consciousness. The commentary raises the question why the Bodhisattva Vipassi makes no mention of the first two links, avijja and sankhara, and gives the explanation that he could not see them as they belong to the past. But this is not the reason. The very ignorance regarding the relationship between name and form and consciousness is avijja. And what accounts for the continuity of the relationship is sankhara. It is because of these preparations that the vortical interplay between consciousness and name and form is kept going. Simply because the first two links are not mentioned in the sutta, the commentators give the explanation that they belong to the past. But it should be clear that the Bodhisattva Vipassi could not have aroused the Dhamma without those two links. Why they are not specially mentioned here is because they are in the background. It is true that there is a mode of exposition in which avijja, ignorance, takes precedence. But what we have here is a different mode of exposition, according to which one has to stop short at the interrelation between consciousness and name and form. As to the cause of this mutual relationship, we have to go back to the vortex simile. Usually, the progress of a current of water is visible at some distance away from the vortex. In this case, the current of water forgets its own impermanent, suffering and not self nature and goes ahead in search of a permanent, pleasurable and self nature. And this itself is avijja or ignorance. This very tendency of the narrow water current to push on against the main body of water is itself what is called consciousness. Similarly, in the context of the samsaric individual, what forms the background for the interplay between consciousness and name and form is the non-understanding that the net result of the interplay is suffering, that it only leads to suffering. In other words, it is the tendency to go ahead in search of a state of permanence, pleasure and self, ignoring the three characteristics of impermanence, suffering and not self. The heap of preparations or efforts arising out of that tendency are the sankharas. It is on these very preparations or efforts that consciousness depends. And then we have name and form existing in relation to it. On the side of name and form or beyond it, we have all the other links of the Patisampada. So in this way we can form a mental picture of the formula of Patisampada by some sort of a pictorial explanation. It seems then that this discourse is further proof of the statements found in the Mahanidana Sutta. There is yet another discourse, one preached by Venerable Sariputta, which supports our conclusions. It is found in the Nidana Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya. There, Venerable Sariputta brings out a simile that is even simpler than the vortex simile. He compares consciousness and name and form to two bundles of reeds. When two bundles of reeds stand, one supporting the other, if one of those is drawn out, the other would fall down. And if the latter is drawn out, the former will fall down. Ekam akadheya eka papateya aparanchi akadheya apara papateya. The mutual interrelation between consciousness and name and form is like that of two bundles of reeds mutually supporting each other. Having given this simile, Venerable Sariputta goes on to mention the other links of the Patisampada formula, as in the case of the Bodhisattva Vipassis insight. It runs, dependent on name and form, the six sense bases. Dependent on the six sense bases, contact. Dependent on contact, feelings, and so on. And then the cessation aspect of these links is also given. By way of illustration, let us suppose that the consciousness bundle of reeds is standing on the left side and the name and form bundle is on the right. Then we have a number of other bundles, such as the six sense bases, contact and feeling, all leaning onto the name and form bundle of reeds. These are all dependent on the name and form bundle. Now, as soon as the consciousness bundle is drawn out, all the others on the right side fall down immediately. There is no interval. True to the qualities of the Dhamma summed up in the terms Sandittika, Akalika and Ehipassika, that is, to be seen here and now, not involving time and inviting to come and see, the entire mass of samsaric suffering ceases immediately. So, this discourse is further proof of the fact that we have here quite a different state of affairs than what is commonly believed to be the significance of the Patisampada formula. That is why we have pointed out that the concepts of birth, decay and death are of the nature of fading away. That is also why decay and death have been described as impermanent, made up dependently arisen, of a nature to wither away, pass away, fade away and cease. Anicchaṁ saṅkhataṁ paticchaṁ pannaṁ khaya dhammaṁ vaya dhammaṁ virāga dhammaṁ nirodhaṁ. When one comes to think of it, one may find it difficult to understand why decay and death are called impermanent and withering or decaying. But the reason is that all concepts, insofar as they are leaning on to the name and form bundle, have to fall down when the opposite bundle of reeds is drawn out. That is to say that the entire mass of samsaric suffering ceases immediately and the whirlpool of samsara comes to an end. This then seems to be the most plausible conclusion according to the interpretation we have adopted. In the Mahatipadopa Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, Venerable Sariputta brings out as a quotation a certain statement of the Buddha on Patisamuppada. It runs, Yo paticchasamuppadam passati, so dhammam passati. Yo dhammam passati, so paticchasamuppadam passati. He who sees the law of dependent arising sees the dhamma. He who sees the dhamma sees the law of dependent arising. This shows that the quintessence of the dhamma is in fact the law of dependent arising itself. Now there are these six qualities of the dhamma summed up in the well-known formula which every Buddhist believes in. This dhamma is well preached, svakkhato. It can be seen here and now, sandittiko. That is, one can see it by oneself, here in this very world. It is timeless, akaliko. It invites one to come and see a pasiko. It leads one on, open aiko. Can be realized by the wise, each one by himself. Though we all have faith in these qualities of the Dhamma, let us see whether the traditionally accepted interpretation of Patisamuppada is faithful to these qualities, particularly to the two qualities Sandhittva and Akalpa. According to that accepted interpretation presented by the Venerable Author of the Visuddhimagga, the first two links of the formula belong to the past and the last two links belong to the future. The remaining eight links in the middle are taken to represent the present. That means we have here the three periods of time, so it is not timeless. That is why they explained that the Bodhisattva Vipassi did not see the first two links. Perhaps the presumption is that since these two links belong to the past, they can be seen only by the knowledge of the recollection of past life. But on the other hand, the suttas tell us that even the stream winner has a clear understanding of Patisamuppada. Ariyocha sanyayo panyaya sudittho hoti suppatividdho. By him the noble gnome is well seen and well penetrated through with wisdom. The noble gnome is none other than the law of dependent arising, and the stream winner has seen it well, penetrated into it well with wisdom. The prefix su implies the clarity of that vision. The question then is how a stream winner who has no knowledge of the recollection of past lives can get this insight. Whatever it may be, the accepted interpretation, as already mentioned, puts the first two links into the past. That is to say, ignorance and preparations are referred to the past. Birth, decay and death are referred to the future. The eight links in between are explained with reference to the present. Thus the formula is divided into three periods. Not only that, in the attempt to interpret the formula as referring to three stages in the samsaric journey of an individual, additional links had to be interposed to prop up the interpretation. Ignorance, preparations, craving, grasping and becoming are regarded as the past causes. Depending on these past causes, consciousness, name and form, six sense bases, contact and feeling are said to arise as results in the present. And again, with ignorance, preparations, craving, grasping and becoming as present causes, consciousness, name and form, six sense bases, contact and feeling arise as results in the future. This kind of interpretation is also advanced. But this interpretation in terms of pentads violates the interrelatedness between the 12 links in the formula. We have already drawn attention to the effect of interrelation between the two links in each pair. In fact, that itself has to be taken as the law of dependent arising. That is the basic principle itself. Because of one, the other arises. With its cessation, the other ceases. There is this mode of analysis, but then it is disrupted by the attempt to smuggle in additional links into the formula. Furthermore, according to this accepted commentarial exegesis, even the term bhava or becoming is given a twofold interpretation. As kamma process becoming and rebirth process becoming. In the context upadana paccaya bhava, dependent on grasping is becoming. It is explained as a rebirth process becoming, while in the case of the other context, bhavapachya jati, dependent on birth becoming is birth, it is taken to mean karma process becoming. So the same term is explained in two ways. Similarly, the term jati, which generally means birth, is said to imply rebirth in the context of the formula of dependent arising. There are many such weak points in the accepted interpretation. Quite a number of authoritative modern scholars have pointed this out. Now all these shortcomings could be sidetracked if we grant the fact, as already mentioned, that the secret of the entire samsaric vortex is traceable to the two links, consciousness and name and form. As a matter of fact, the purpose of the formula of dependent arising is to show the way of arising and cessation of the entire mass of suffering, and not to illustrate three stages in the samsaric journey of an individual. The distinctive feature of this law of dependent arising is its demonstrability in the present. As suggested by the term to be seen here and now and timeless, even as the Bodhisattva Vipassi discovered it through radical reflection itself. The salient characteristic of the teaching of the Buddha is its visibility here and now and timelessness. This fact is well revealed by the Hemaka Sutta of the Sutta Nipata. The Brahmin youth Hemaka sings praise of the Buddha in the following verses. Yeme pubbe vyakansu hurang gotama sasana icchasi iti bhavissati sabbantam iti hitiham sabbantam takkavaddhanam naham tatha abhirami panchame dhammang akkhayi tanha nighatanam muni yang viditva satocharam tare loke visattikam. Those who explained to me before, outside the dispensation of Gotama, all of them said, so it was and so it will be. But all that is so and so talk, all that is productive of logic, I did not delight therein. But now to me, O sage, proclaim your Dhamma, that is destructive of craving, by knowing which, and mindfully faring along, one might get beyond the world's viscosity. Now to paraphrase, whatever teachers explain to me, their teachings outside your dispensation, used to bring in the past and the future in their explanations, saying, so it was and so it will be. That is, they were always referring to a past and a future, but all that can be summed up as so and so talk. By the way, the term itihitiya had already become a technical term for hearsay among the ascetics. Such teachings based on hearsay were productive of logic, as for instance, testified by the Sambhasava Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? And so on. But I was not pleased with such teachings, says Hemaka. It is only you, O sage, who teaches the Dhamma that destroys the craving in the present. Understanding which and mindfully following it accordingly, one could go beyond the sticky craving in the world. Hemaka's praise of the Buddha was inspired by this most distinctive feature in the Dhamma. We have already stated that by Dhamma is meant the law of dependent arising. This is further proof that the basic principle underlying the formula of dependent arising could be traced to the constant relationship between consciousness and name and form, already present in one's mental continuum, without running into the past or leaping it towards the future. We know that in order to ascertain whether a banana trunk is pithless, it is not necessary to go on removing its bark, layer after layer, from top to bottom. We only have to take a sharp sword and cut the trunk in the middle, so that the cross-section will reveal to us its pithless nature. Similarly, if we cut in the middle the banana trunk of preparations with the sharp sword of wisdom, panyamyam tikhina masin gahitva, its internal structure as revealed by the cross-section will convince us of the essenceless nature of the group of preparation. Whatever existence there was in the past, that too had the same essenceless nature. And whatever existence there will be in the future will have this same essencelessness. And I see it now in my own mental continuum as something visible here and now, not involving time. It is with such a conviction that the noble disciple utters the words, arising, rising, cessation, cessation. That is how we arise at the realization summed up in the phrase, yang kinche samudhe dhammang sammang tang nirodha dhammang. Whatever is of the nature to arise, all that is of the nature to cease. All this goes to show that the accepted interpretation has certain shortcomings. To take up another simile, we have already alluded to the fact that the Buddha has been compared to a physician. Though this might well sound a modernism, we may say that a specialist doctor today needs only a drop of blood or blood tissue for a full diagnosis of a patient's disease. When seen under the microscope, that blood tissue reveals the pathological condition of the patient. Even the patient himself could be invited to see for himself the result of the blood test. But once the disease has been cured, the doctor could invite the patient again to undergo a blood test if he likes to assure himself of the fact that the disease has been effectively treated. The Buddha's teaching has a similar here and now and timeless quality. What is not worthy is that this quality is found in the law of dependent arising. Then there is another question that crops up out of this traditional interpretation of the formula of dependent arising. That is, the reason why the two links, ignorance and preparations, are referred to the past. In some discourses, like the Mahanidana Sutta, there is a discussion about a descent of consciousness into a mother's womb. Simply because there is such a discussion, one might think that the law of dependent arising has reference to a period beyond one's conception in a mother's womb. But if we carefully examine the trend of this discussion and analyze its purpose, such a conclusion will appear to be groundless. The point which the Buddha was trying to drive home into Venerable Ananda by his catechism is that the constant interrelation that exists between consciousness and name and form is present even during one's life in the mother's womb. This catechism can be analyzed into four parts. The first question is, Vijnanam vahi ānande mātukuccesmiṃ na okkamissatha apinukho nāmarūpaṃ mātukuccesmiṃ samuccesatha. And Venerable Ānanda's answer is, no hetam bhante. If Ānanda, consciousness, were not to descend into a mother's womb, would name and form remain there? It would not, Lord. The Buddha is asking whether name and form can persist in remaining inside the mother's womb if consciousness refuses to descend into it, so to say. The word samuccisatha presents a difficulty as regards etymology, but it is quite likely that it has to do with the idea of remaining, as it has an affinity to the word uccitta, left or remnant. So the point raised here is that in the event of a non-descent of consciousness into the mother's womb, name and form will not be left remaining there. Name and form has to have the support of consciousness. However, in this interrelation, it is consciousness that decides the issue. If consciousness does not descend, name and form will not remain there. So even if at the moment of death one has a thought of some mother's womb, if consciousness does not descend in the proper manner, name and form cannot stay there. Name and form has always to be understood in relation to consciousness. It is not something that is to be found in trees and rocks. It always goes hand in hand with consciousness. So, the upshot of the above discussion is that name and form will not remain there without the support of consciousness. Venerable Ananda's response to the first question then is that indeed is not the case, O Lord. Then the Buddha asks, Vijnanam vahi ānande mātukuccismiṃ okkamitvā okkamissatha apinukho nāmarūpaṃ itthattāya abhinibbattissatha. If Ānanda, consciousness, having descended into the mother's womb, were to slip out of it, would name and form be born into this state of existence? Venerable Ananda's reply to it is again that indeed is not the case, Lord. Now the question is, Ananda, if for some reason or other consciousness having descended into the mother's womb slips out of it, will name and form secure birth as a thisness or itthatta? We have mentioned above that itthatta is a term with some special significance. That is, how a there becomes a here, when a person takes birth in a particular form of existence. In short, what it implies is that a person comes to be born. In other words, if consciousness having descended into the mother's womb slips out of it, that name and form will not mature into a thisness and be born into a thisness. There is no possibility of the thisness coming into being. For there to be a thisness, both consciousness and name and form must be there. We can understand then why Venerable Ananda replied in the negative. The next question the Buddha puts is this: Vijnanam vahi ānande dharasseva sato vachijjissata kumārakassava kumārikāyava apinukho nāmarūpaṃ buddhiṃ virūlin nepullaṃ āpajjissata. Ifananda, the consciousness of a boy or girl were cut off when he or she is still young. Will name and form come to growth and maturity? To that question too, Venerable Ananda replies that indeed is not the case, Lord. Now that the preliminary questions have been correctly answered, the Buddha then comes out with the following conclusion, since the necessary premises are complete. Tasmati Ananda, e seva hetu, e tannidanam, e sa samudyo, e sa pachyo nam rupas, yadidam vinyana. Therefore, Ananda, this itself is the cause, this is the reason, origin and condition for name and form, namely consciousness. What is emphasized here is the importance of consciousness. Out of the two, namely consciousness and name and form, what carries more weight with it is consciousness, even if there be a trace of name and form. What the above questionnaire makes clear is that name and form arises in a mother's womb because of consciousness, but that name and form will not remain there if consciousness does not properly descend into the womb. Also, if consciousness after its descent were to slip out, name and form will not reach the state of a thisness. So much so that even after one's birth as a boy or a girl, if consciousness gets cut off in some way or other, name and form will not reach growth and maturity. So from all this, it is clear that consciousness is an essential condition for there to be name and form. Then the Buddha introduces the fourth step. Vijnanam vahyananda namrupe patittham nalabhisatya. Apinuko ayatin jati jaramaranam dukkha samudaya sambhavu panyayati. If Ananda, consciousness were not to find a footing or get established in name and form, would there be an arising or origin of birth, decay, death and suffering in the future? No indeed, Lord, says Venerable Ananda. Now this fourth point is extremely important. What it implies is that though the aforesaid is the normal state of affairs in samsara, if for some reason or other consciousness does not get established on name and form, if at all such a contrivance were possible, there will not be any samsaric suffering again. And this position too, Venerable Ananda grants. So from this discussion too, it is obvious that simply because there is a reference to a mother's womb in it, we cannot conclude that ignorance and preparations are past causes. It only highlights the mutual relationship between consciousness and name and form. Now the question that comes up next is, how does consciousness not get established on name and form? In what respects does it not get established and how? The consciousness of a samsaric individual is always an established consciousness. It is in the nature of this consciousness to find a footing on name and form. These two go together. That is why in the Sampasadaniya Sutta of the Digha Nikaya, it is mentioned in the discussion on the attainments to vision, Dasana Samapati, that a person with such an attainment sees a man's stream of consciousness that is not cut off on either side, established in this world and in the next. Purisasya ca vijnana sotam pajanati ubhayato abvachinnam idaloke patithitam ca paraloke patithitam. What is implied here is the established nature of consciousness. The consciousness of a samsaric individual is established both in this world and in the next. Another attainment of vision mentioned in the sutta concerns the seeing of a man's stream of consciousness not cut off on either side and not established in this world or in the next. And that is a reference to the consciousness of an arahant. So an arahant's consciousness is an unestablished consciousness, whereas the consciousness of the samsaric individual is an established consciousness. That is precisely why in the Saddhartha Bhagavata Samyutta Nikaya and in the Sarathapakasini, where the episode of Venerable Godika's suicide is mentioned, it is said that though he cut his own neck intending to commit suicide, he was able to attain parinibbana as an arahant by radically attending to the deadly pain. But Mari took him to be an ordinary person and hovered around in search of his consciousness in vain. The Buddha, on the other hand, declared that Venerable Gaudiya passed away with an unestablished consciousness. Apatitthitena cha bhikkhave jnanena Gaudiya kulaputto parinibbuto. O monks, the clansman Gaudiya passed away with an unestablished consciousness. The consciousness of an ordinary samsaric individual is always established. The above mentioned relationship is always there. Because of this, we can say that there is always a knot in the consciousness of the samsaric individual. For him, this world and the next world are tied together in a knot. In this case, what is needed is only the untying of the knot. There is no need of a fresh tying up, as the knot is already there. But the term Patisandhi Vijnana, or rebirth linking consciousness, is now so widely used that we cannot help making use of it, even in relating a Jataka story. The idea is that after the death consciousness, there occurs a rebirth linking consciousness. However, some scholars even raise the question why a term considered so important is not to be found in the discourses. On many an occasion, the Buddha speaks about the descent into a womb, but apart from using such terms as okkanti, descent, dabhasavakkanti, descent into the womb, and uppatti, rising, he does not seem to have used the term patisandhi. What is meant by this term patisandhi? It seems to imply a tying up of two existences. After death, there is a relinking. We have mentioned above, and in connection with the simile of the bundles of reeds, that when the consciousness bundle of reeds is drawn, the name and form bundle of reeds falls. And when the name and form bundle of reeds is drawn, the consciousness bundle of reeds falls. And that there is a relationship of mutuality condition between them. The question then is why a tying up is brought in while granting the relationship by mutuality condition. Because going by the same simile, it would be tantamount to saying that rebirth linking consciousness straightens up when death consciousness falls, as if when one bundle of reeds is drawn, the other straightens up. This contradicts the nature of mutuality condition. There is no timelessness here. Therefore, patisandhi is a term that needs critical scrutiny. The mental continuum of a samsaric being is always knotted with the tangle within and the tangle without. And it is already implicit in the relationship between consciousness and name and form. What happens at the dying moment is usually posed as a deep problem. But if we carefully examine the situation in the light of the canonical discourses, we could see here an illustration of the law of dependent arising itself. Now, as far as this established consciousness and the unestablished consciousness are concerned, we have already drawn attention to the relationship between here and there. We came across the term itthatta, otherwise called itthabhava. As a rendering for it, we have used the term thisness. And then we have already pointed out that this itthabhava or thisness goes hand in hand with anyathabhava or otherwiseness. That is to say, wherever thisness arises, wherever a concept of something arises, as a rule, that itself is the setting in of transformation or change. Thisness and otherwiseness are therefore to be found in a pairwise combination. Wherever there is a thisness, there itself is an otherwiseness. So in this way, because of the fact that due to this thisness itself, wherever thisness arises, otherwiseness arises, together with it, wherever there is a there is always a here. This then is how the consciousness of the samsaric being functions. As far as one's everyday life is concerned, what is called the conscious body is the body with consciousness. Generally, we regard this body as something really our own. Not only that, we can also objectify things outside us, beyond our range of vision, things that are objects of thought or are imagined. That is what is meant by the canonical phrase, Imasmincha savinyanake kaye baiddhacha sabbani mityesu ahankara mamankara mananusaya nahanti. There are no latencies to conceit by way of eye-making and mind-making regarding this conscious body and all outside signs. What it implies is that one can have latencies to conceit by way of eye-making and mind-making regarding this conscious body as well as all outside signs. Now if we consider the deeper implications of this statement, we can get at some new perspective for understanding the nature of the relationship between consciousness and name and form. If someone deeply attached to a person who is not near him, but living somewhere far, far away, is heavily immersed in some deep thought, then even if there is some painful contact, such as the prick of a fly or the bite of a mosquito, or even if another comes and shakes him by the shoulder, he might not feel it because he is so immersed in the thought. Now why is that? Normally, the rightful place for consciousness is this body. But what has happened now is that it has gone away temporarily and united with the name and form outside, with that object far away. But it can be awakened. This is the way the mind travels. It is due to a lack of clear understanding about the journey of the mind that the concept of a relinking consciousness was found to be necessary. The way the mind travels is quite different from the way the body travels. The journey of the body is a case of leaving one place to go to another. But the mind's journey is not like that. It is a sort of whirling or turning round, as in the case of a whirlpool or a vortex. That is to say, just as in the case of a rubber band which could be stretched lengthwise or crosswise, there is a certain whirling round going on between consciousness and name and form. It is because of that whirling motion, which could either be circular or oval-shaped, that consciousness and name and form could either get drawn apart or drawn in as they go round and round in a kind of particle interplay. So, in a situation like the one mentioned above, for that person the distant has become near. At the start, when he fell to thinking, it was a there for him. Then it became a here. And the here became a there. This brings out in a subtle way the relevance of these concepts to the question of understanding such teachings as the law of dependent arising. Concepts of a here and a there are in a way relative. They presuppose each other. Itthabhava, thisness, and anyathabhava, otherwiseness, referred to above, mean the same thing. Itthabhava goes hand in hand with anyathabhava. They are bound in a pairwise combination. When you drag in one, the other follows of necessity. It is the same in the case of the relationship between birth on the one hand and decay and death on the other, as already mentioned. Also, consciousness and name and form always move in an orbit. It is not something like the journey of the body. Thought goes, but it rests on consciousness. It gravitates towards consciousness. It is because consciousness also has gone there that we say someone is immersed or engrossed in some thought. It is consciousness that carries more weight. This is sufficiently clear even from the Dhamma discussion of the Buddha quoted above. If consciousness does not descend into a mother's womb, name and form will not remain there. If consciousness does not join in to provide the opportunity, it will not grow. This is the nature of the relationship between them. Though not well authenticated, cases have been reported of persons on the verge of death going through such unusual experiences as visualizing their own body from some outside standpoint. Taking into consideration the above mentioned relationship, this is quite understandable. That external standpoint might not be a place which has the ability to sustain that consciousness, or which is capable of creating a new body out of the four primary elements. All the same, it temporarily escapes and goes there and is now wavering to decide whether or not to come back to the body, as it were. It is on such occasions that one visualizes one's own body from outside. So here we have the norm of the mind's behavior. Seen in this way, there is no need for a fresh time now or reading it, because it is the same vortex that is going on all the time. In the context of this samsaric vortex, the there becomes a here and a here becomes a there. The distant becomes a near and a near becomes a distant. It is owing to this state of affairs that the consciousness of the samsaric individual is said to be always established. There is a certain quiet character about it. Whenever consciousness leaves this body for good, it goes and rests on the name and form object which it had already taken up. In other words, this is why the Buddha did not find it necessary to coin a new term to express the idea of conception in some mother's womb. Consciousness has as its object name and form. It is precisely because of consciousness that one can speak of it as a name and form. It is like the shadow that falls on consciousness. Name and form is like an image. Now in taking a photograph, there is a similar turn of events. Even if one does not pose for the photograph with so much makeup, even if one turns one's back to the camera, at least the shade of his shape will be photographed as an image, if not his form. Similarly, in the case of the samsaric individual, even if he does not entertain an intention or thought construct, if he has at least the latency unsaid, that is enough for him to be reborn in some form of existence or other. That is why the Buddha has prayed such an important discourse as the Chetana Sutta of the Nidana Samyutta in the Samyutta Nikaya. It runs, Yancha bhikkhave cheteti, yancha pakappeti, yancha anuseti, arambhanam etam hoti vinyanasya thitiya. Arambhane sati pakittha vinyanasya hoti. Tasmin patitthite vinyane virulhe namarupa savakkanti hoti. Namarupa paccaya salayatanam salayatana paccaya phasso, phasso paccaya vedana. Vedana paccaya tanna, tanna paccaya upadanam upadana paccaya bhavo, bhavo paccaya jati, jati paccaya jaramaranam. Soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. Eva metas kevalasa dukkha kandas samudhyo hoti. Monks, whatever one intends, whatever one mentally constructs, whatever lies latent, that becomes an object for the stationing of consciousness. There being an object, there comes to be an establishment of consciousness. When that consciousness is established and grown, there is the descent of name and form. Dependent on name and form, the sixth sense basis come to be. Dependent on the sixth sense basis arises contact. And dependent on contact arises feeling. Dependent on feeling, craving. Dependent on craving, grasping. Dependent on grasping, becoming. Dependent on becoming, birth. Dependent on birth, decay and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to be. Such is the arising of this entire mass of suffering. Then comes the second instance. Noche bhikkhave cheteti, noche pakappeti, atache anuseti, arambhanam etam hoti vinyanasya thitiya. Arambhane sati patittha vinyanasya hoti. Tasmin patitthite vinyane virudhe namarupasya avakkanti hoti. Namarupaccaya salayatanam salayatanapaccaya phasso, phassapaccaya vedana, vedanapaccaya tanna, tannapaccaya upadanam upadanapaccaya bhavo, bhavapaccaya jati, jatipaccaya jaramaranam sokaparideva dukkhamanasupayasa sambhavanti. Yonetasa kevalasa dukkhakandasa samudayo hoti. Monks, even if one does not intend or construct mentally, but has a latency, that becomes an object for the stationing of consciousness. There being an object, there comes to be the establishment of consciousness. When that consciousness is established and drawn, there is the descent of name and form. Dependent on name and form, the sixth sense basis come to be. Dependent on the sixth sense basis arises contact. Dependent on contact, feeling. Dependent on feeling, craving. Dependent on craving, grasping. Dependent on grasping, becoming. Dependent on becoming, birth. Dependent on birth, decay and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to be. Such is the arising of this entire mass of suffering. The significance of this second paragraph is that it speaks of a person who, at the time of death, has no intentions or thought constructs as such. But he has the latency. This itself is sufficient as an object for the stationing of consciousness. It is as if he has turned his back to the camera, but got photographed all the same due to his very presence there. Now comes the third instance. Yatochakho bhikkave no cheva chedeti no chapakappeti no chanuseti arambanam yetan na hoti vinyanasutthiti. Arambane asati patittha vinyanasa na hoti. Tadappatitthite vinyane avirule namarupa savakkanti na hoti. Namrupanirodha, salayata nirodho, salayata nirodha, phasa nirodho, phasa nirodha, vedana nirodha, tanna nirodho, tanna nirodha, upadana nirodho, upadana nirodha, bhava nirodho, bhava nirodha, jati nirodho, jati nirodha, jara maranam, soka parideva, dukkha domana supayasa nirujjanti, eva metasa kevalasa dukkha kandasa nirodho hoti. But monks, when one neither intends nor constructs mentally and has no latency either, then there is not that object for the stationing of consciousness. There being no object, there is no establishment of consciousness. When consciousness is not established and not grown up, there is no descent of name and form. And with the cessation of name and form, there comes to be the cessation of the six sense spaces. With the cessation of the six sense spaces, the cessation of contact. With the cessation of contact, the cessation of feeling. With the cessation of feeling, the cessation of craving. With the cessation of craving, the cessation of grasping. With the cessation of grasping, the cessation of becoming. With the cessation of becoming, the cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, the cessation of decay and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to cease. Thus is the cessation of this entire mass of suffering. This third instance is the most significant. In the first instance, there were the intentions, thought constructs, and latency. In the second instance, that person had no intentions or thought constructs, but only latency was there. In this third instance, there is neither an intention nor thought construct, and not even a latency. It is then that there comes to be no object for the stationing of consciousness. There being no object, there is no establishment of consciousness. And when consciousness is unestablished and not grown, there is no descent of name and form. Where there is no descent of name and form, there at last comes to be that cessation of name and form with which the six sense bases and all the rest of it, down to the entire mass of samsaric suffering, cease altogether then and there.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.